Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Down the Fulham Road, we're burning with ambition. The first division is where we want to be. And if you've seen what a team we've got this season, you know the reason, we'll get there easily. But first we're heading down the Wembley Way to show the world that we can really play. Oh, this year we're gonna win the cup.
Good evening, this is the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport London. We remember, actually, if you, as you're listening on Love Sport London, 31st of March, you need to retune your radios. There won't be any more Love Sport London. If you want to listen to Love Sport across the UK on DAB, retune your radio so it goes to Love Sport Radio. Hit the auto-tune button or go into the settings and there'll be an auto-tune button there. There'll be a retune button, a refresh button on your DAB radio. Need to do that on the 31st. For now, though, stay on Love Sport London because we're talking all things Fulham. It's myself, Miles Blumsome, and from Fulhamish, Mr. Dom Betts. Dom, how are you today?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not too bad.
Not bad, better than terrible, isn't it? Well, especially with the state of affairs around the world at the moment.
Exactly.
Fulham drawing away at Bristol City on Saturday. Another blow to the automatic promotion hope. Should we go through the three-word reviews first?
Yes, I've got them from all over social media today. I've gone from Twitter, Facebook and Instagram.
Perfect. All the avenues.
Yeah, we'll start off with Twitter. We had from Monopoly Dog. Automatic hopes gone, as you just alluded to there. They love all with Sunday League referee. A Ricardo Marengo lost opportunity away. Now go across to Facebook. Probably my favourite one from Scotty Adams. Great away burgers. that's all we care about, the food. We don't care about the game. As long as the food was great, that's fine by me. Daryl Brugging with all's not wells, referring to obviously Naki Wells getting the opening goal. Colin Bugler with toothless, not ruthless. And heading across to Instagram, we had Andy LV90 with Robin is blind. Esther 9 with TC for PM. And Patrick Joseph Brown was pedestrian pace penalised.
I don't think I've ever had a bad burger at a football match. I quite like the suspect don't know what's in it burgers.
Yeah, I usually go for a pie, and I've had some bad pies. Macclesfield meat.
But pies are so much harder to do than a burger.
Yeah, to do a pie right, it needs to be good. Like, just take inspiration from Bradford and Wigan. Good pies.
Go to Bradford and Wigan if you want good pies.
Great pies.
Good away
Bradford's
days.
Chicken Balti. Superb.
There was the three-word review about the referee, Sunday League referee, wasn't it? What was bad about the referee?
I think it was one of those games where it's not like the Swansea game where, you know, Swansea fans were outraged by him because he was sort of giving decisions in Fulham's favour. I feel like it was one of those refereeing performances where both teams were getting nothing off him. And, you know, I think the main thing that people are pointing towards was the decision right at the end with the Tom Kenny. It could have been a penalty. What was weird about this, because obviously everyone who's watching it on the TV thought that, was it Mine Park from Bristol City sort of dragged Tom Kenny's leg away? Mm. But everyone in the ground and in the stand, no one it didn't look like a penalty from being at the game. It was quite weird. Then you watch it back on TV and you can sort of see he swiped his leg before he grabbed the ball. But it's one of those decisions. Like I didn't really blame the referee for it. I don't think you could blame the referee for the performance, really. I thought that, you know, a draw was probably the fair result on the balance of play. I think we had the ball and we got the ball into decent areas, but actually challenging the goalkeeper, we probably only did it maybe two or three times apart from the goal.
You mentioned Tom Kearney could have had a late penalty. Did get a late equaliser, 84th minute up at Ashton Gate. Actually, quickly, Pies, Ashton Gate, how were they?
All right, just
no Bradford.
Yeah, they weren't bad, but they weren't anything special. Should have had a burger, clearly, according to Scotty Adams.
So. The best away burgers. So with Tom Kearney, great performance, good goal. It's not always been the case for him this season.
No, it's been interesting with Tom Kearney. I think, you know, obviously he had a tough season in the Premier League last season where it didn't really work for him. He didn't really have, let's say, for example, the impact that Jack Grealish has had at Aston Villa this season, because that was often a debate in the Championship when they were both playing in it, that who was the better, you know, creative midfielder. I think sort of Jack Grealish has proved he's probably the better one this season. But I think, you know, what's been the problem with Tom Kearney is I feel like he's been a bit too passive in some games, and I feel like this is probably the best performance or one of his best performances of the season so far. I thought it hasn't actually been many games where he's just, you know, you got those players who consistently drop like a 7 out of 10,
yeah,
but won't ever be a 9, where I feel like Tom Kearney hasn't really had too many 7 out of 10 performances this season. That's been the biggest problem. He's either been like an 8 or a 9 or a 4 or a 5.
Right.
So it's sort of been quite inconsistent, but it was definitely the best performance for a long while from him. He was dictating the game. You know, he's playing a bit deeper with Bobby Reid playing a bit further forward in the midfield of him, not playing out wide. But yeah, Kearney was, you know, back to his best on the weekend, and we really need to keep it up if we've got any chance of getting promoted this season.
Yeah, how important is Kearney still to the side?
I think he is important, but if he's not playing to his best, it's not like it's a detriment to the side, but I don't think it adds anything to the team, for example. You know, you could be better off if Tom Kearney's not at his best, having a midfield three of, let's say, for example, Kevin McDonald or Harrison Reed with Harry Arter, and then, you know, lots of Bobby Reed going forward. I feel like sometimes he can sort of not have an influence on the game, and if Tom Kearney's not having an influence on the game, then there's not too much of a need for him in that midfield, because I think in that position he's playing a bit deeper in a number 8 role, there are better players to do that role.
Not a load of chances throughout the game. Going 1-0 down must have been worrying. Naki Wells with the goal for Bristol City must have been worrying just because of the lack of chances. Was it a case of thinking we might not get back into this, we're not creating a lot?
Yeah, I feel like that's always a problem with Fulham. I think like it's a case of this season really has been, if, you know, if we go in the lead, we tend to win, and if we go behind, we tend to lose. But it was good to see us get back in the game. I think the goal sort of woke us up a little bit. Obviously, it came from that corner, which eventually fell to Naki Wells. But like, one thing about corners in this game was quite interesting, was that that's probably the only good corner of the game. It seemed like both teams just couldn't take a corner, and I don't get how you can be a professional footballer and not be able to take a corner.
Yeah, no. I agree with this. And this isn't a Championship. This is a Premier League thing. This is an international thing. Do you think it's a case of the players are trying to be so precise and hit it so well, when you just think, float it in around the penalty spot and let the big boys have a go at it?
Yeah, they seem to sort of trying to aim for an exact area or someone's exact head, where just loft it into an area where your centre backs or your striker,
and
for
if
example,
the run's right,
yeah, they can attack it. Like, there were so many corners from Ivan Caviero, I thought was very poor on the weekend, that it just missed everyone. It's not even it didn't hit the first man; it beat every man.
Yeah, that's worse. They're trying to drill it in. They're trying to hit that penalty spot with pace,
or float it into the back post, and there's no one there, so it ends up going for a goal kick or a throw-in.
Do you think that's a miscommunication if that's happening, though? Because if surely the corner taker gives the signal of where they're going to put it. That's what the hands up, the one hand, two hands, you know, pick their nose a bit. And that's what everyone watches and goes, right, this is where the ball's going. Is that necessarily Caviero's fault, or is that actually a miscommunication between the runners, the centre-halves, maybe Mitrovic thinking this is actually going near post when the signal was back post and they've not been listening properly?
It was quite interesting, because we did take like basically one near post corner and nearly scored from it. It was nearly literally a repeat of Dennis Adoy's goal in Derby in the playoff semi-final a couple of years ago, where, you know, Caviero, I think it was Cav, it was either him or Knockout, he dinged it into the near post and Adoy flicked it on, and unfortunately it didn't go into the back of the net. But yeah, I just don't get professional footballers not being able to take corners, either not beating the first man or beating every man. And I think it shows, I know fans get restless with short corners, but sometimes for teams who probably can't take a corner, it probably helps. It makes them keep the ball.
They end up doing the same thing. It just takes longer with a short corner where they still drill it into the front man.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes I would rather have a throw-in than a corner if your player can't take one.
Well, when you had Rory Delap in the side, you definitely would if you're a Stoke City fan. So the result of the weekend leaves Fulham 6 points off West Brom, 9 games left to play, so it's 27 points up for grabs. It's not completely unachievable automatic promotion. However, Fulham's run-in is probably the most difficult out of the three. It looks like it's gone, doesn't it?
I think it's hard to tell just because we've still got to play West Brom and Leeds. And that will either set us even further away or bring us even closer, because obviously we go away to Leeds next Wednesday and then we go away to West Brom, I think about the 18th of April or something like that. So for me, I'm not ruling out completely yet. I'm resigned to the fact that playoffs is probably going to be the likely outcome. I think you're really going to have a definitive answer after the Leeds game next Wednesday. I think if we win it, you could argue we're straight back in it. If we lose it, it's completely done. And I think, you know, when it's quite a weird one, because, you know, you go away to Bristol City, you would say a point there's not a bad result. But the point I made this in, actually, in the Fulham's group chat earlier, was that there's only a certain amount of games where you can start saying you can take a point in.
Yeah, well, the problem is it would have been a good away point if there hadn't been points in games against teams like Luton earlier in the season, which means that you have to then make that back up by beating the teams that normally would be fine.
That they look at the standing of the team you're playing. It's like, oh, going away to a team in the playoffs. Oh, that's a good point. It's not a good point because there aren't many games left for you to take a point if you are going to catch a team who are 6 points, 7 points ahead of you. So I think that's the biggest problem here. Like, we're getting to a point now where, well, how many other games can we afford to draw? How many other games can you afford to drop points in? Realistically, I don't think more than two.
Is it a case now, do you think? Because we were talking about when Fulham were chasing the automatic promotions places, briefly going into them over sort of the January period. And there was a lot of talk with you guys on Fulhamish and on this show about how you couldn't believe Fulham were in the spot they were in based on how inconsistent they'd been. Are we now seeing the proper result of inconsistency?
I think it's still mad we are where we are. I still think it's crazy we're third in the league. I wouldn't argue we've been the third best team in the league all season. I mean,
Brentford have had a great year, and they're behind you by 4 points.
Yeah, well, they've really fallen off a cliff. I know they got 1-5-0 on the weekend, but before that, I think they're winless in 5 or 6 games, and obviously we take them on Friday night. But yeah, the results in recent weeks from the likes of Forest, from the likes of Brentford, is obviously confirmed us in the playoff position, because there was a point where we could have easily dropped out of the top six completely, but I think that's sort of ruled out now. I think playoffs are sort of confirmed. And yeah, it's interesting that we are third in the league, because I don't think the way we're playing, I think in a good championship season, we'd probably be, you know, maybe 8th or 9th. I really do think that. And I think that the biggest problem for us is if we get promoted, we'll move on to this great, but that means there's even more work to do ahead of next season. But I think, yeah, for us, my point is that we can't afford to keep saying, "Oh, it's a good point." You know, we're going away. We can't afford to be drawing games. If we are going to get top two, you need to actually win. You actually need to start pretty much winning nearly every game.
In the playoffs, an away point could be a good point anywhere in the semi-finals. Do you think the way that Fulham play, with it being not creating a load of chances but being relatively tight at the moment, do you see that being something that would actually be suited to the playoffs and would put you in good stead to go up?
I think what put us good stead in the playoffs is we've sort of had heartbreak and we've had winning it. And I think so they know what both feel like, and that'll hopefully spur them on to want to win them again. I think that we're a lot more defensively solid than we were under Slavisa Jokanović. Especially with Michael Hector coming in, and, you know, Adoy and Chrissy look very balanced at fullback, and Tim Reams looks a lot better since he's been next to Michael Hector. I don't think it's any surprise we've looked a lot better at the back since Alfie Morton's been out the side. So I don't know, I think we are in good stead going into the last, but it's only because I think the rest of the teams are quite poor.
Fair enough. Well, up next, we're going to have a look at the future for Fulham. So we want to have a look and see what we think Fulham need to change if they stay in the Championship, what Fulham will need to change if they do get promoted up into the Premier League. Fulham fans, if you want your say, 0208 70 20 558. Give us a call, send us a message on WhatsApp, or of course, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. This is the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport, the station giving fans a voice. We've got your team covered with Churchill Business Insurance. It's 9:15.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
The Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport London. Miles Blumsome and Dom Betts here with you for the next 40 or so minutes until 10 o'clock. Then it'll be the post-match fan show. Charlie Hawkins and myself taking you through all of today's action. Liverpool currently leading Atletico Madrid in the Champions League second leg, tied on aggregate as it stands. Right, what we want to do now is talk about the future of Fulham. Specifically next season, what needs to happen? Because I think we all know that Fulham need a few changes, a little bit of a rebuild in the summer, and that's whether Fulham go up or stay in the Championship. Should we start with, if Fulham go up, Dom, what needs to change? I know you've mentioned before you'd be tempted to get rid of Scott Parker to start with, even if there's promotion.
Yeah, I just feel like for a chance to stay up, I just don't know if Scott Parker's the most equipped. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I'm Parker out. I'm not. I'm just thinking, you know, what happened last season.
Yeah. Parker tentative.
Like, what it would be, would it, is it the best idea to keep him? I know, you know, the only time it's really happened where a manager's been gotten rid of when a team's got blown was Slavisa Jokanović at Watford.
Yeah.
And then they brought Kike Sanchez Flores in and he did an exceptional job there. Honestly, if a better option was available to bring in, I don't see why they wouldn't do it. I understand, you know, Scott Parker probably deserves a chance in the Premier League if he was to get Fulham up, but I think getting Fulham promoted from the Championship would be just simply doing his job, if that makes sense. Like, that was the aim at the start of the season, so that's what he should be doing. I don't think.
But surely, if you meet the aim, that means you can't really be sacked.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see what the transfer policy would be, considering what happened last time and what's happening to Aston Villa this season. That
you'd think it would be a bit more intelligent.
You think it would, but then you look at the team now and how many players would you start in the Premier League? I'm looking at Rodak, I'm looking at Hector, I'm looking at Mitrovic.
Josh Onoma?
No. They're the only ones who are guaranteed. You know, you could probably give Cav a go, you probably give Bobby Reed a go, probably give Tom Kearney another shot, but they're the ones who stand out as, you know, players who could be Premier League quality. But then it's like, then you go through the process of making so many changes again and you having that transfer policy. I think the transfer policy would need to be, you know, players who know what it's like to be in a relegation scrap. Because I think that was the issue last time, is a lot of the players we signed, the likes of Andre Schürrle, Jean-Michel Seri, Frank Zambo and Guisa, that they didn't know what it was like to fight in a Championship, in a Premier League sort of relegation dogfight.
And I think there was also a case of, you spent a lot of money, over 100 million, on parts that didn't necessarily equal a sum. So you bought great players that didn't really fit into a system per se. You probably could buy the same amount of players, spend a lot more money, but get work really hard-working players that, like you said, will scrap. But also, Scott Parker, what he needs to do is look at the system that he wants to use properly. And yeah, you tried to play good football where it was a bit expansive. That doesn't work in the fight. You need to keep it tight if you're going up. You need to... I know you could say that Sheffield United have gone against that with overlapping centre-halves, but they've not conceded many goals. That's generally the way to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think to stay up in the Premier League, you can't just go out trying to beat a team 5-4. If you look at the Arsenal home game from last season, where I think we went into a 1-1, we could have just shored it up from there. But no, we went out and attacked and ended up losing the game 5-1. So I think it needs to be more intelligent. But then you can look at the football Scott Parker's playing this season, and we do look more short at the back than we did on the Slavisa Cano, which we do sort of look to be fairly clinical of our chances, and we take the chances we seem to get. But I just think when it does come to the transfer policy, it needs to be we're going to play this system, and we're going to buy players who fit into it. You look at someone like, you know, Ivan Cavallero, who's been poor this season, but we signed him on a permanent deal in January. Mm. You know, you got Bobby Reid, we signed him on a permanent deal in January. You know, I know the deal in a knockout transfer is that if we get promoted, we should sign him. But he's, again, it's easier for me recruitment-wise when you're a Premier League team going down into the Championship than vice versa.
Yeah.
Because you know which players work in the Championship, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the Premier League, it didn't work last time. And I think that... what your biggest problem is, you don't want to create that divide in the dressing room again. I think the dressing room was quite poisonous last season, just because you have these players on Championship wages, obviously Bar Kearney and Mitrovic with their new contracts they signed in last summer, and you create a divide. I think you need to also, when you're looking at recruiting players, you need to look at personalities as well.
I think 100%.
I think that was one of the biggest problems last season. There was too many players with big egos who were like likes of Seri, who was called, what was it, the Ivorian Iniesta or the Ivorian Xavi.
Oh, he looked like an absolute... he was being chased by top clubs in Europe and he went to Fulham.
Yeah, and he started off really well. Up to that Brighton away game...
scored a screamer at one point, didn't he?
Against Burnley, yeah. And, you know, the first month or so, he looked really, really good. And I was like, oh, what a player we've got on our hands here. But it sort of went off the rails. And I think the personalities in the dressing room weren't the right ones. I think there was this great sort of camaraderie with the likes of Rufon and Lucas Piazon and Thomas Callas the season before, and that just didn't transfer. So I think our recruitment and the likes of Tony Khan would need to think really, really heavily about what type of players they're bringing in. Not what type of players positionally or what type of players footballing-wise, but, you know, what are they like as people and will they fit into the sort of ethos of this dressing room?
If you're looking at current players who you think could become available, who would potentially go to Fulham, which players stand out at you for a Premier League survival race that you'd want to sign, whether that's Championship, Premier League players, even League One players if they're the right person?
It's hard to think about, you know, players who instantly pop out, because, you know, do we try to utilise the loan market with, you know, youngsters from top Premier League? Because Harry Wilson, I think, although Bournemouth have been quite poor, I think he's done a good job there this season.
Yeah.
And so I think do you try to utilise that market? I think what I would like to see is, I don't want to say, you know, you get like your 30-year-olds who... like you're not like Phil Bardley's, but you know, you Premier League experience. Oh, you think you need Premier League experience, but who are still, you know, late 20s. I don't think you need, because we don't really sign anyone above 30
Danny
anyway.
Danny Drinkwater looks like he might be available again.
Yeah, his life has sort of turned into a catastrophe since he won the Premier League with Leicester. And obviously we were linked with him actually in the January transfer window.
Got away with one there, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I think it's the recruitment team just need to maybe look... I don't want to say, oh, we need Premier League experience and that's it. You can get good qualities from abroad. We did actually show that with Ryan Babel. But, you know, look at the loan sign of Callum Chambers. He was our player of the season last year. And I think a player like him, why wouldn't we go for him again? He's not playing week in, week out for Arsenal. Why wouldn't he want to come back to Fulham?
Yeah, so it's a very good option. Well, he was until he got injured, wasn't he? He was playing very well for Arsenal.
Depends how much they want for him, because I would want him on a permanent transfer.
Yeah. He's too old to be getting loan transfers. Now, looking at if Fulham don't go up, Fulham fall short in the playoffs, then what needs to change? If it's another Championship season next season to push up and get promoted, I'm assuming you'd definitely be Parker out at that point.
I don't know.
So you'd rather keep him if you're in the Championship than in the Premier League?
Yeah, it's a very weird opinion to have, but I kind of sign in towards it, because I think another season in the Championship would do him good, whereas I think a season in the Premier League could completely ruin his managerial career in that sense. I think it is a season too early. Another season in the Championship, but then what happens to the squad? Would Mitrovic stay? Would Kearney stay? Like, financially wise, one of them would have to go, because I don't think you can afford to pay their wages again.
You'd say that Mitrovic would be the player that the Premier League clubs would look at. Kearney's more likely to stay club captain. Mitrovic will be looked at by, well, you know, even Newcastle could probably use him back there, or one of the clubs that are around that area down the bottom of the Premier. Whoever stays up, if Watford stay up, if Bournemouth stay up, a team like that would probably look at him.
They'll look at him, but it's whether they can afford him. I don't think the club would sell.
And most Premier League clubs could.
They could, but it's whether they're willing to pay, you know, £35-40 million for him.
If you have to shift one of him and Kearney, and people aren't coming in for Kearney, you might have to lower the price though.
I don't know. It depends what Tony Khan's going to do financially, because obviously we'll still have Rodak. You imagine we'll have Hector. You'll have the likes of Brian, Christy, Adoy, I think. And obviously we've signed Caballero and Bobby Reid on a permanent deal. I think if we go down, as I do think one of them will have to go, just because I don't
go down, stay down.
Sorry. I think financially wise, we just can't have another season of paying a sort of wage. Also, we had the transfer embargo a few years ago, and I think that we need to look at being. We're going to become the next Nottingham Forest or the next like Blackburn Rovers, Leeds United, kind of, you know, just sort of staying in the Championship for years on end. I mean, Ipswich did it for about 20 years, but because when it's weird, whenever we've been in the Championship, we've never just been mid-table mediocrity. We've either been fighting at the top or fighting to stay up at the bottom.
Yeah.
So I think that it is just the staying. If we did stay down, I think it was making sure the club stays financially stable, because we've seen so many clubs, you know, even you have to look at Charlton now, that who just are completely all over the shop. So I think, you know, as I said, one of them would have to go, but I don't see too many other players leaving. I mean, you know, would we get some of the loan deals? You know, Knockhart, we wouldn't need him, so he'd obviously go back to Brighton. I'd like to see Harrison Reed being made a permanent deal, but whether Southampton would sell him, who knows? But I don't think we'd actually be in too bad of a place if we went down. But if Mitrovic was to go, like, without Mitrovic and Rodak this season, I do think we'd be about 10th.
So if we're going away from keeping it financially viable, but in terms of actually strengthening the squad to get promoted next season, what needs to change in this squad if it's going to get out of the Championship?
I think what it needs, I think fullback is the main area I'd look at.
Mm.
Christy and Adoy, and not really Brian, but Christy and Adoy do a job, and they're doing a good job now. I think they're more balanced than having Joe Bryan in the team. But I think we can improve that. I think there's one area we could always improve in. I think that's one area we've seemed to have neglected over a long, sustained period of time now. I think ever since, you know, we had Fredrickson Target the season when we went up, and they were great. Ever since then, our fullback area has been very, very weak. And, you know, we know we bought Joe Bryan in the Premier League last season, didn't cut it. I think we should have just lumped on the money for Matt Target at the time that Southampton were asking for. Sorry. So, yeah, I think for us, fullback is the main area to look at, because I think goalkeeper you're sorted, maybe a centre back, because, you know, Tim Ream's getting on now. But then it honestly depends. If Mitrovic was to go, then who? I can't even think of a striker. Oh yeah, he'd come in straight away, because, you know, we've been linked over years with, you know, the likes of Dwight Gayle. It seems every transfer window we're linked with him, the likes of Brittason Belonga, but you can't really replace Mitrovic.
It's a completely, yeah, well, Dwight Gayle is a completely different style of football.
Exactly. It requires to completely change our style. So I think for the sake of, you know, the sustainability of the club, that's why promotion is so important. Because if Mitrovic does go, would we just be destined for mid-table mediocrity for the next few years?
Oh, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be fun, though. That's the thing about this, is that, you know, whether you go up or you stay down, it's going to be very fun to see what happens in the summer, because you never know where a player can come out of, especially a striker. You sign someone from Norway or Sweden. Look at, like, Haaland this season. No one saw that. Players can come out of nowhere.
Well,
which is
it shows
great.
How Haaland's thing's amazing, because I think he's only played like 3 or 4 times for Norway.
He's played twice for Norway so far. He'll be a permanent fixture now, you'd think. But do you think the loan market is the best way to go if you're going to get promoted? You know, you're talking, especially fullbacks, you're talking young fullbacks, whether someone like Cole Walker-Peters doesn't play well for Southampton this year, he might need a Championship loan next season. Even another Tottenham player came on last night, 18-year-old Malachi Fagan-Walcott, young and untested, but you never know what you're getting with these players. You look at players further up the table, you know, anywhere in the Premier League, there are young players who are just on the cusp of a breakthrough that might be looking for a loan, and fullback is one of those positions.
Yeah, I think a loan market when you're in the Championship is what you've got to do. I mean, looking at Fulham this season, the only players who've signed on permanent deals are players you already had on loan.
Yeah.
You know, Caviero and Bobby Reid. We didn't spend any money in the summer because, you know, Tony Khan didn't want to spend anything until the cessional money came through. So I think, it would be another season of utilising the loan market. But, you know, I think the business we did this season was good, but it was good if you get promoted.
Can you see the team going back in for Kongolo after playing twice, getting the injury?
Well, they seem so adamant to get him, so I don't see why not. You know, him and Hector at the back could be a really good partnership. But yeah, I think next season, if we weren't to get promoted, again, it's interesting, do we go all out for it again? Or do we sort of rein it in a bit, and then if we might be more equipped in that sense to, because there'll be less pressure on automatic promotion, and we might actually feed off that.
Overachieve instead of underachieve.
Exactly.
It's just after 9:30. We are going to be talking about the Brentford game on Friday night. Up next, Griffin Park is the place. Friday night, Brentford away, must win for Fulham. Now, if there's going to be any chance of automatic promotion. This is Love Sport London.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio. The Opposition View on Love Sport.
It's the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Mars Blumsom and Dom Betts from Fulhamish here until 10 o'clock. It's Brentford at home this on Friday night, sorry, not at Griffin Park. It's going to be at Craven Cottage. Be on the telly as well, which is always wonderful. We're joined now by Mark Burridge from Brentford Match Day. Mark, hello, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Good evening, yeah. No, I'm very good, thank you. I'm looking forward to the game on Friday.
Yeah, it should be a good game. Do you think Brentford has surrendered all hopes of a top two finish now?
I think we probably have to win on Friday and then beat West Bromwich Albion on Tuesday to possibly even start to romance chances of second place. But I think realistically, we're looking at the playoffs now, and obviously this may well not be the last meeting between the two clubs on Friday this season.
Yeah, I mean, Fulham and Brentford in the playoffs, especially if we ended up playing at Griffin Park and the last ever Griffin Park being against Fulham, that would be a tasty encounter. Do you think, you know, Brentford's, you know, really good record at Craven Cottage, especially since we first came down in 13-14, is going to be something that Thomas Frank's going to inspire his players to try and get a result on Friday with?
Well, I think he'll take a lot of heart from the game at Griffin Park, firstly, which was probably the most complete performance I've seen from a Brentford side in the Championship at home, where we, apart from the first 10 minutes, I felt we controlled the game and looked very comfortable, probably should have won by a few more. But it is notable, as you mentioned, that we've got a very good record at Craven Cottage, and there's a lot of confidence amongst the players. Even when we had this spell where we were struggling to win, we only probably had a poor 30 minutes at the start of the second half at Luton, up at Kenilworth Road against Luton. That was really our only, what I would say, very bad performance. So we've had our little wobble, and I think there's a lot of confidence we'll go on a good run before the end of the season.
On that poor run, was it you were winless in 5 or 6 games? Was there anything particularly it was down to, or was it just simply just sort of getting on the wrong end of things?
I think we were a little bit like Leeds have become. You know, you'd hear their fans saying they dominate the first 10 minutes of a game and they go behind. That's what we did against Blackburn at home. We went 2-0 down eventually, but because we've got goals in our team, you know, with the front three, we're now on 64, the same amount as West Brom. We can always get back into a game in an instant, and there is that confidence that we can put a game to bed in a matter of minutes. Pontus Janssen, not sure whether he's going to come back. Hopefully, it'll be before the end of the season. When he does so, it'll be a big boost for everybody, for the team and the fans.
Are Brentford fans getting worried, you know, before obviously the 5-0 battering of Sheffield Wednesday, that it was possibility that they could even, you know, all the season's hard work could be sort of done for and they could have even dropped out of the top six?
I think there were a few people who were nervous, but that's just natural. I think most Brentford fans are very, very confident in what's going on at the club, have great belief in the team, great belief in the way the club is set up, and a lot of belief in Thomas Frank as well and the rest of the coaching staff.
Now, Mark, you being a match day commentator at Brentford, at Griffin Park, it's the last season in the stadium. How's the feeling been? Is it? I know it's been a very successful season for Brentford, but do you get the feeling that fans don't really want to leave because it's, you know, it's home and it's going well?
I think at the start of the season, no one was really thinking about going to the new ground. that it was a matter of, well, we don't really want to leave here anyway, do we have to go? But as the season's gone ahead and a lot of people renewed their tickets and they've been down to the new stadium, which is absolutely fantastic, and they've been able to pick out their seats. They've got state-of-the-art stuff down there, which can show you the view that you're going to have. The centre down there is absolutely fantastic. So they've really engaged in the new stadium, and I think everyone now is looking forward to it. Yes, it's going to be sad whether the last game will be a playoff game or the last game against Barnsley, or who knows what's going on with the rest of the season with the virus around at the moment. But I think we're now actually looking forward to getting into the new ground. Pay our respects to the wonderful Griffin Park. But it's been fantastic seeing every game sold out for the last few weeks, and will be, of course, before the end of the season.
When it comes to promotion for Brentford and the promotion aims of, you know, it looks like if they are to get promoted this season, obviously it would be through the playoffs. I presume that you don't think it's too early for this Brentford side to go up?
I don't. I take a lot of, if I can, sort of look at the way that Eddie Howe took Bournemouth into the Premier League, quite an offensive team. If we could hang on to our players, we do score goals, and I think we would be competitive against the teams down the bottom, which would get us enough wins to give us a chance of staying up. Obviously, there would be maybe one or two players going, and there would be a lot of new players coming in as well. But it's a very young team, and there's a lot to come from it still. So I think that's why fans are very confident we're going to see a good end to the season. And if we did have to go through the playoffs, of course, Brentford do have the worst record of all the football teams. It used to be Preston, but they won their last one, so we've now got that mantle. There'll be a lot of fear, but underneath, I think there's a bit of confidence that Brentford could do the job this time.
Yeah, you just mentioned the young players and the historic record of Brentford in playoffs being fairly poor, but do you think the young players will help when it comes to a playoff push, that they maybe haven't been quite as affected by previous losses in the past? And they have, I don't want to use the term youthful exuberance, but that sort of young cockiness, that confidence. Or do you think being a bit more pragmatic, having a few older heads, would be sort of better?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think the fact that there's no one there who will remember it, you know, or they'll just be reading about it, or they might be hearing the fans say, oh, you know, we just don't go well at Wembley. They won't really take too much notice of it. Because we've got a young squad, it's a matter of nurturing them through to the end of the season. Obviously, there's some players like Josh De Silva, who's had a bit of a mid-season lull. He's come back to form the last couple of games. He's been a great find for us. He's come to us from Arsenal. And it's a matter of getting these players through to the end of the season and making sure, if they are in the playoffs, that they're buzzing for the games when they come. So I think there's a lot deep down inside, although a lot of Brentford fans will be going, oh, we don't really want the playoffs. If it does come to that, they will be confident they can get the job done this time.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Brentford, you know, playoff record and even promotion, it has been quite funny over the years that it often, especially in recent attempts, it's sort of been a Fulham player stopping them. I think obviously there was the famous, infamous Doncaster game with Marcelo Trotta's penalty, and then obviously in the final against, was it Yeovil, where Dan Burn on loan from Fulham ended up scoring in that game. Yeah. I think that was that 12-13, and then there was obviously Fernando Morbieta on loan from Fulham at Middlesbrough in the season before. But I think this game at, would you say this game at Craven Cottage is probably the biggest derby, I guess you can call it, between Fulham and Brentford, probably not, maybe not ever, but definitely in recent years?
Yeah, I think it probably is where the teams are, third and fourth. I mean, they probably are where they deserve to be in the league at the moment. And I would say that the top four teams are slightly a cut above everybody else that I've seen. Although we've lost home and away to Forest, you can see with Forest, they don't really have the consistency so far. They may come good before the end of the season. But I think the top four are certainly the best four teams in the division and can probably beat anyone else on their day. Leeds do look a class apart from what I've seen, both of those games. And West Bromwich Albion, of course, we've got on Tuesday at home. So it could be a great few days for Brentford. Or we could be just going in a week's time, well, now let's just consolidate our position in the playoffs and try and time it right. Whichever way it's going to be, there's so little between the two teams, isn't there, Brentford and Fulham? It could go either way. It's very, very difficult to call.
What are the areas of this Brentford side that Fulham should be looking to exploit? Are there any obvious weaknesses?
No.
Is this just you not wanting to give it away to the opposition view? Is this it? You want to keep your cards close to your chest? We can flip it then. What are the weaknesses
of when we are on our day? Yeah. We are absolutely sensational, and we have a great spine of the team. Raya in goal, Norgaard down the centre, obviously Pontus Janssen, if he's playing as well at the back. But if not, Ethan Pinnock's been sensational this year. We picked up from Barnsley last season. He's been absolutely fantastic since he's come in. And of course, the strike force speak for their own. Ollie Watkins, to me, is now a more complete centre forward than Neil Maupay was at this time last year. He's on 22 already. Maupay's got 25 last season. I know Mitrovic has got 23, so both of those two will be fighting out the golden boot in this league. But Ollie Watkins brings you so much. And Brentford can just score goals from anywhere this season. And I know with Fulham, I think your next top goal scorer is Tom Kenny with 8, isn't it?
Yeah, we basically rely on Mitrovic to score to get us out of a lot of situations.
Or a Caviero screamer.
Yeah, or a Caviero screamer. Yeah, it's pretty. I feel like Brentford are sort of differed to Fulham this season is that, you know, that front three, they're all scoring loads of goals, whereas as opposed to us, it's either Mitrovic and then maybe Kenny might score the odd screamer. But I think what worries me is obviously is the record that Brentford have got. And so if you're looking at Fulham's team, where do you think Brentford are going to exploit us the most? Do you think it will be in the fullback areas once again?
Well, I mean, Chris, I've always been impressed with Christie since when he was at Coventry back in the League One. One day when I saw him up when they were playing up at Northampton. But I think down the flanks we will have a lot of joy. Dennis Odai, of course, he got sent off a couple of seasons ago, didn't he, at Griffin Park? And I think we will just really go at Fulham from the off. And it should be a thrilling game. It will be a great one for the fans and, you know, a great one for the neutrals watching on telly as well. So we're really looking forward to it. We know it probably won't define our season from either team. If it is going to be the top two that go on, we're almost going to need to go on one of those Aston Villa runs, aren't we, of last season, winning sort of 8 games in a row or something like that. Either of the clubs is going to challenge the top two. So we'll be well placed in the playoffs and hopefully have all the players back by then.
What's the score going to be Friday night, Mark?
I think it's going to be Fulham 1, Brentford 3.
3-1, away win. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. Brentford matchday commentator Mark Burridge there on the Fulham Fan Show. Dom, 3-1 away win. It's a bold call. Brentford do score goals. What are you thinking?
I think it's Brentford at home. I hate going into because our record against them is fairly poor. I think ever since we came down, we've only beaten them once in the league, and that was I think it was 2-0. It was 2-0 or 3-1. I can't remember when Kenny got a last minute sort of consolidated win at Griffin Park. You know, at home I've seen us lose to them. Was it 4-1? It was 2-2 last season. The funniest thing is obviously they were saying, you know, I think we were, or maybe we, I think we were 2-0 up, and then they made it 2-2. But then our argument was, well, if we won the game, we would have gone up automatically and wouldn't have had that day out at Wembley and things like that. But you know, I'm never confident going into Brentford games. It's one of the only games in the season where I really are doubtful about the team. I just feel like they seem to always have our number. But I feel like how important this game is for us to stay in that race for top two, because I don't think the team really want playoffs. I really think they really want this top two spot. They don't have to go through that for, you know, a third championship season in a row of us being in the league. So I think there's going to be a lot of motivation going into this one. You know, I'm backing us to get the win here, just because I think how important a win would be to here. It would send a message out ahead of that Leeds game next Wednesday. So yeah, I'm going to go for a 2-1 win Fulham, because I really don't think we're going to be able to win this game by more than one goal.
2-1. Okay, so we've had 3-1 one way, 2-1 the other. I'm just going to go 1-0 Fulham. I think Fulham will just scrape it 1-0. Up next, should we talk about something that happened 10 years ago on this day? I'm quite excited. Just after 9:45, this is Love Sport London.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport London. The only place giving for the station giving fans a voice. We've got your team covered with Churchill Business Insurance. Miles Blumsome and Dom Betts here. 10 years today since just an amazing time in Fulham history, in recent history anyway. Travelling away to Juventus in the round of 16 of the Europa League. It was a loss. but still a big night for Fulham, wasn't it, Dom?
Yeah, especially with the eventual result of this tie. But it's just crazy to think, you know, we're hosting Brentford at home on Friday, and 10 years ago we were going away to Turin to go play against Juventus. And it's just, it's not the Juventus of obviously now, but even the names in some of these Juventus team, you know, Cannavaro, Grosso, Marchisio, albeit a young Marchisio, Christian Poulsen, Candreva, Diego, Trezeguet, Iaquinta, Del Piero, Camoranesi, Gregera, who ended up actually playing for Fulham, De Shegley. And I think the funniest thing, obviously,
and of course, Alec Manninger.
Yeah, legend. I mean, I think this was the point where Juventus had the biggest goalkeeping crisis of all time, and I think both their first two choice goalkeepers were out. But what's amazing about this is there was only 11,000 fans there.
Oh, no. 11, because it's because Fulham, I guess, weren't seen as a fashionable enough club, and it was seen as a walkover. 3-1 was the score on the day, but Fulham went through the tie eventually. It's the year they got through the Europa League final, which just seems like a lifetime away. Fulham's team, and this is going to... I'm not sure whether you're going to be happy or sad about this, because there are some good names here. Schwarzer, Baird would have been right back, Konchesky at left back, Hangeland and Hughes in the middle. Midfield three of Atuhu, Greening, Jira, Duff on one side, Simon Davies on the other with Zamora up top. Clint Dempsey came off the bench.
Yeah, even looking at the Fulham bench, you know, Pascal Zubabula.
Zubabula, what a name.
Stephen Kelly, who sort of turned into the Irish Cafu during this Europa League season. You know, Chris Smalling sitting there on the bench. Somehow Keanu Marsh-Brown, I think he's playing in non-league now, made it on the bench with Clint Dempsey and Eric Nevland. And with Eric Nevland, I kind of wish we just had him like 5-6 years earlier. He would have been absolutely... he's still one of the best finishers I've seen at Fulham. He was so deadly, but... yeah, this, you know, a midfield pivot of Dixon Atuhu and Jonathan Greening away at Juventus in the Europa League. You know, stuff of dreams, really. And I look back at it and it's, I was so glad I was of an age where I can remember these games. Like, if I was born maybe 4 or 5 years later, it might be sort of a distant memory. But, you know, I was sort of the age where you really start getting into football. You know, I would have been, you know, 13, 14 during this campaign. And that's when you really, I feel like you really, really start getting properly into football. And, you know, unfortunately, the only game I got to go to was the final, but it's something I always...
Oh, you're the only game. Oh, no.
But no, if I was... imagine being the age I was now, I would have been going to...
every game.
Every game, you know, going to Amka Perm in Russia, CSKA Sofia in Bulgaria, you know, Wolfsburg in Germany, Donetsk in Ukraine. But it is great to be of an age where you can remember these sort of things, because it is... you know, for kids growing up now, it's sort of something that's probably just spoken about, and they didn't get to witness it.
Around the streets of Fulham, the legend that was the Europa League run in 2010. What, like you said, you do have memories. What are your memories of that Europa League run?
So if we talk about... the main one for me is always going to be the Clint Dempsey fourth against Juventus in the home leg. Just because all I remember, I was sitting in the Riverside stand that day, and... so everyone was stood up, and I see the ball leave Clint Dempsey's foot, and I don't see the ball again. Instead, it's gone over the keeper's head into the back of the net, and everyone's going absolutely crazy. Like, I didn't see sort of the flight of the ball. I see it leave Clint Dempsey's foot. Everyone stood up, 13, 14 year old me couldn't see it, and then I saw it dip into the back of the net, and absolutely, like, just all the, especially the Juventus and the Hamburg games here for me really stick out. And you know, I remember watching the Wolfsburg away game where we took a 1-0, really early 1-0 lead, which after winning the home leg 2-1, and I was really worried after that. I was like, we can't just settle on a 2-1, you know, we've got the away goal, we need to go for one. And then we got that early goal, Zamora turning his man and smashing it into the back of the net. I remember going crazy in the living room at my house. I think it was half term as well. But yeah, I just have, there are so many memories. And, you know, even just being in Hamburg for the final, being in the square, all the Fulham fans were, and it was obviously the biggest collection outside of a ground where I've seen Fulham fans. And it was, I think that's where I sort of caught the
bug,
want to go to every game bug.
Caught the travel
like,
bug.
Like, I had a season ticket for, you know, many years before that, but that's what really, yeah, from then it's just like, well, this, yeah, following Fulham home and away, you know, when they potentially get into Europe, or mainly Europe for me now is just pre-season talk. there's nothing wrong with going to the Algarve to watch Fulham play. But yeah, this was the main turning point, I guess, in my Fulham watching career.
Wow, great turning point. Another team whose fans will dream of European days gone past is Leeds. Now, Leeds next Wednesday, so it won't be a Fulham fan show next Wednesday. They've been, the Leeds fans have been bit vocal on Twitter about Fulham's away support. What's your reaction to this?
Well, so this happened before where if the away team doesn't sell out the Fulham location, Leeds will like say, oh, we're not now selling home tickets. So I was like, Fulham really sell out an away location anyway if it's outside of London. Mm. It's on a Wednesday night. You're charging £40 for a ticket, £44 if you buy it on the gate. And, you know, it's Wednesday night. Fans can't get back on public transport, you know, via the train. I think the last train's like 9:45, so you'd have to leave the game half hour early. So, there's this whole... I think there's an inferiority complex with Leeds fans. Yeah. They think, oh, we sell at every game, so every other team should. Well, was it one? You're a one-team city. So, every person in Leeds supports Leeds United, whereas in Fulham, it's that. And I quite enjoy not being a team who sell out every allocation within 5 minutes. Because it means I don't have to worry about when to buy my ticket.
You can actually get along.
Yeah, it means I can just buy my ticket whenever I want. And I quite enjoy it. If we took 5,000 everyone, I enjoy when we take like the odd, 800, because you most likely know everyone in that stand. And I think there's a much more sort of community feel to it. And what I do enjoy is how much our poor away support annoys other fans.
Yeah.
I was like, why does us not selling out our end annoy you so much?
You should get more noise from your side.
Yeah, they seem to get so angry because they sell out. Everyone else should, and it's weird if they don't.
Just really quickly, what do you think the score's going to be against Leeds next Wednesday?
I don't think we're going to get a win. I think it's going to be a 1-1.
1-1. Well, this is actually the last Fulham fan show I'm doing with you because, as I've been mentioning, Love Sport is going national. The Love Sport national station is going to be the only station where you can listen to Love Sport on DAB. It means there'll be no more Love Sport London. If you haven't already, you need to retune your radio to get Love Sport national, or you retune your DAB radio. There should be a retune button or an auto-tune button. That also means, because there's no show next week, this is the last Fulham fan show on a Wednesday. So next time you should listen is in 2 weeks on Thursday night. You said
half seven until eight o'clock
will be the next Fulham fan show. Thursday in 2 weeks. 2 weeks time on Thursday. Dom, you'll be here with Charlie Hawkins for that. Hopefully reviewing a Brentford win, a Leeds win, and then a win the following weekend, and I don't know who that's against.
QPR.
So as this is our last one, I don't know how we sort of round this. Do we shake hands?
No, because coronavirus, what is it?
We have to walk past each other without acknowledging that we're there.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Anyway, it's been fun. Thank you very much.
It's been great.
Yeah, you'll be back 2 weeks on Thursday. This has been the Fulham Fan Show. Up next, the post-match fan show. Myself and Charlie Hawkins getting you through the next hour on Love Sport.
We're burning with ambition. The first division is where we wanna be. And if you've seen what a team we've got this season, you know the reason we'll get there easily. But first we're heading down the Wembley Way to show the world that we can really play. Oh, this year we're gonna win.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.